invitation to speak at Kathleen's 85th birthday. I'm very happy and honored to be able to speak in your birthday.
And I'm happy and honored to have you.
Thank you. I was at Kulang for 15 years, and I worked with Luang Gu for most of the time, and I listened to quite a bit of analysis seminars and tried to learn some analysis. And so we figured out the problem with Tai. He's also a postdoc at Kulang. So we try to find a problem that we can do together and understand some analysis. And so this is a problem we came up, and the problem is well known, and so we make some small progress. So he's now at the UBC, and actually Bob Strain was a postdoc of mine, but now he's at Princeton now, and he's actually also related to Kulang, because he's actually a postdoc of C.S. Lin, and was a student of Louis. Now, so the problem is, now let me give a very short introduction of incompressible non-vectorial equations, and I think many people here are truly expert on this equation, and I will just tell you, remind you some of the notations. So you take a velocity field in R3, and there's a time I choose from minus t naught to zero, go to R3. So it's velocity vector field. And the non-vectorial equation is dv dt plus v dot gradient v plus gradient p equal to a Laplace operator acting on v. And then you add a divergence free conditions, and here I put viscosity equal to 1. So this is standard equation, and the p is the pressure. Now the question is, of course everybody knows this question, is determined whether you can last smooth initial data or finite energy remain regular for all time. Now, the standard, so here, I think in the next few slides, I will tell you a few the standard notation and some known result of this equation. If you take velocity, you know you can rescale it, and with time, with the space and time scale in lambda and lambda square, the standard diffusive scaling. For the velocity scale as the lambda, and the pressure scale in this way, then you get the non-vectorial equation is the scaling invariant. So you want to always assign the scaling dimension that x is 1, t is 2, and the velocity is minus 1, pressure is minus 2. Now here the standard, I also use the standard notation of LS LQ norm. You take LQ norm in the space and LS norm in time. And then if you compute a dimension, then the dimension of this norm is the 2 divided by s, and because the time is the scaling dimension is 2, and 3 divided by q, because you're in 3 dimension, minus 1. So minus 1 is because the velocity is minus 1. So this is the dimension of the integrals, and this is well known energy inequalities, and essentially this is still the only estimate you know about the non-vectorial equation in general. It's either v squared and the gradient v of time from 0 to t integrates that initial data. And pretty much this, you don't really know much more than this, even up to date. So now the Sauber inequality, because here, from here you get the L infinity in time and L2 in space. And from this Sauber inequality, you also get the L6 in space and L2 in time. And then you can get all kind of interpolation between them. But no matter how you interpret them, the dimension will not change. The dimension is always 2 minus S of V divided by Q minus 1. And if you plug in the value we have here, then the dimension is always 1/2. So it's not dimension invariant. And this is so this estimate is not that useful. This is a well-known thing. We all know that the ray constructs global weak solutions, and for large data. But he also proved one thing is he also showed that if the blow up ray, if you want to blow up, then it has to be bigger than delta times time. If the probe time is T0, it's T0 minus T2 minus 1 half. This statement means that if you reverse the inequality, if you say the velocity is less than this one, then it will be regular. And this constant delta is small. Actually, it's surprising that this statement, even today, we cannot prove that. Suppose this inequality is reversed with less than or equal, and with this delta in standard small but allowed to be large, then you want to show another story equation is regular. This is still a completely open problem. So in a way, I mean, this is, sounds like a completely ridiculous. One cannot even determine this under this assumption, under this rate, this velocity is less than delta times T0 minus T2 minus 1 half, with delta large. You cannot prove a regularity. But this is actually what we first got interested in this problem, is how come such a statement cannot be extended to from a small delta to a large delta. And then after we try some time, we still cannot do it. And so we can only do it in one special case. And so that's why I'm going to tell you. And the notation is, here this is just standard notation. You always use the parabolic cylinders. It's the ball times the time. The time is scaling r squared instead of r. So this is the notation. And now I will just spend a few minutes to sort of review the known results from the old days. Some people call it Sarin criterion, but maybe there are some other people work on it. I don't really know how many people work here, so I think Louis know a lot more details than I do. The point is that you know the V will be regular if you satisfy any estimate which is zero dimension, zero or negative dimension. Actually, what Sarin did was actually for the negative dimension case. So if you have this dimension, and then people gradually extend to the dimensionless case, the dimension zero case, and roughly speaking, it says if you have certain norm and which is dimension is equal to zero, then you can prove regularity. And the difficult case, one very difficult case, is done by Spherik and his co-worker. And this is, actually, if you think about it, this is in 2003. In the case of L infinity in time and L3 in space, this was only proved in 2003. Yes.
The dimensionless norm has to be small in order to prove the regularity. Has Spherik removed the smallness?
No.
Can't prove this for
L3. Oh yeah. If you know that the integral is small, then of course it's not a problem. Or if you know the estimate, the dimension is negative, then it's also not a problem. But if the dimension is zero.
Right, dimensionless quantity and small is not a problem.
Yeah, that's not a problem. Large is a problem. Yes. So there, this is the L3 in R and L infinity in T, and this was done. But of course, you allow the norm to be arbitrarily large. So this was the last general case one is known. And then you have all kind of other criteria, like you also have this Biot-Kato-Mida criteria, says that the velocity integrated is less, is bounded, and it's implied regularities. Sorry?
That's Euler.
What?
That's for Euler equation.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, this is also for Euler, yes. But yes. Now, what I want to say is, if you look at all these criteria, this is all the criteria is all require some dimension, dimensionless quantity to be finite. And then the other direction is done by Schaeffer and the Caffarelli-Cohn-Nierenberg. First done by Schaeffer with some partial results, and the Caffarelli-Cohn-Nierenberg do the general the optimal estimates. It's the Hausdorff dimension of the singular set. Is actually the one dimension, you know, half parabolic Hausdorff measure of a singular set is vanishing. And then there's a special criterion. It says if you take the L3 norm, the integral of space and time divided by 1 over r squared, if this quantity limit become small, then it's regular. So this was, and then later on there are many, many other papers, and Fang Hua Lin or Gang Tian and Xin and Gustafsson and so, I mean, they all extend this, they all either improve it or have some small extension, but basically it's all the same, actually. Alright, so, now, as I say, our goal is to try to rule out the standard blow-up rate. If the velocity is blow up like this, you take a point, there's a point, and you blow up, and this with V with dimension, because dimension is minus one, so this would be the standard blow up rate. And I think, as far as I know, this was the typical numerical simulation when they blow up, it's blow up like this. I don't know if maybe Tom can tell you more about the simulations. But this blow up rate is actually does not rule out by any of these previous criteria, because L3 is not, you cannot use the L3, L infinity result on this one. So this one was not ruled out. And actually, this is still open problem. And now it's, can one prove that under this condition, the Navier-Stokes equation has a regular solution? So a small partial result, well, this is not exact partial. So the slightly different direction is the self-similar solutions. If you think, because you're thinking about this because you are thinking about self-similar solutions, but actually there is no self-similar solution. This was all, again, done by Sverig and the Tsai. Okay, so now what we are doing is we want to do the axiosymmetric case because the general case, simply there is no estimate and we don't know very much. So let's try to do the axiosymmetric case. The axiosymmetric case, you take velocity, it decomposes into the radio. Now I use r and theta and z as the standard cylindrical coordinate. So that you get v of r is the r direction, and then plus v of theta is the theta direction, and v of z now is the z direction. And this vector is a unit vector in each direction. So you can show that the explicit form is r direction is x1 divided by r and x2 divided by r. And theta, this is all clear. Now, with this coordinate, then I think it will take you an afternoon to calculate this equation. But you can also look at it in the textbook. It's the r direction satisfies this equation. And theta direction says by this equation, and z direction says by this equation. So it looks like a horrible nightmare. The pressure P appear in the theta equations, and also in the z direction, but not in the theta directions. On the other hand, the v of velocity of r, it will couple with theta through this term, and then the v theta will couple with vr through this term. And then, of course, then the Vz and this are coupled because there's a pressure P there. And the divergence-free condition is this. Now, it will be fairly difficult for you to remember the form of this equation. And I think the only thing to remember is this is all a transport term. The transport term is actually there's a drift here, and this is almost the transport term is very easy. And then these two is the Laplace, the term for Laplace operator. So it's also, now the only thing to remember is this r and the theta equation, they are sort of coupled together. And that's really what it is. Now the divergence free condition says this vr, this term vr and the vz, they are coupled together. But the v theta has nothing to do with it. So this is a divergence free condition. Alright, now by the Kaffarian-Cohn-Lindenberg partial regularity criterion, we know that all the singular point must be in the z-axis because otherwise there would be a circle. And then there's the old results a long time ago by, well, now I can't really spell her name. Let me try. I hope I spell her name correctly. So she proved that if v theta equals zero, and with her co-worker, then the solution is global, it's regular. But V theta equals zero is very strange because the fluid is not even, the air is not even running. So, and then there are a lot of partial regularity results. There are also regularity criteria. But But this is not a complete list, actually. You can keep on going. I can add three or five or more here. But what's interesting is despite the axiosymmetric assumption, this criterion is not much better. It's essentially the same as the non-axiosymmetric case, meaning that they did not really improve over the non-axiosymmetric case much. Because they cannot really use the non-axiosymmetric condition very effectively. There's a work by Tom Ho and Lee, and I think Lee was again was student of Louis. And now, what they did is they study axiosymmetric case, and they make they have quite a few papers, and I think Tom is going to talk later on. But let me just mention a few points. They construct large initial data, and which was smooth, and they also make some model problems so that to study this axiosymmetric equation, and this you are going to listen to this later on today, and so I will not say much, so I will leave it here.
TT?
Oh.
He has some similar results.
Yeah.
He has
no
global resistance
for
axial symmetric. Not for axial.
Well,
you cannot do it for axial. He did it for helical symmetry. The axial has the...
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah. Axial has a line which
is
invariant, and you cannot read it.
Yeah.
Then
the
overlap will not improve.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was good. I say in the beginning, there are many more experts here. But I only study the axiosymmetric case. I made sure that this our result was not proved before, and so. But look, I mean, I think I mean, in a way, this is almost the first nonlinear PD paper I wrote, actually. But anyway. All right, so this is a theorem. The theorem says the following. If you take an axiosymmetric case, and then you assume that this bound, the velocity is, now I use R squared, instead of X squared, use R squared, because now it's axiosymmetric. Axiosymmetric case, so the R is a more natural parameter. So it's R squared minus T and minus 1/2. And then this constant G star is allowed to be big. Then we can show that actually this velocity actually is in L infinity for time up to zero. So this means this will be regular. So this is sort of answer the question about this the blow up this the race criterion in the axiosymmetric case, but in the form that we are in this form that we are thinking about it, the blow up in this sense in the axiosymmetric case. So after this one posted, then we try to extend, we try to remove this, because here it's R squared minus T, so there's a natural question that whether you can remove the R squared or you can remove the T. And this was possible, and so the theorem is the following. It says, now you can use, instead of R squared minus T to the minus 1/2, you can use either 1 over R, or you use 1 over T to the minus 1/2. And actually you can do any epsilon in between any two of them. And this was, but this result was proved that almost simultaneously. You can see just a few days difference. And so, now, so this answer, the race question that whether this T to the minus 1/2, you're allowed to have a large constant. But it's only in the case of axiosymmetric case. So we cannot really do this for non-axiosymmetric case. But you can see from the argument I'm going to give later, it depends crucially on the axiosymmetric case assumptions. So now, now one look at the for now it's the proof, it's the idea of the proof. So the idea of the proof is looks like the following. You consider the vorticity equation. So vorticity equation is you can write down the vorticity, and this take 10 minutes to work it out. It looks like this. And the Bautista equation is of this form. It doesn't look very good, the d omega theta dp plus this. This part is the same, and there's a potential term of times omega theta, but there's also a source term from v theta. So this equation is not that great. But if you make the following transformations, if you divide the capital omega, defined to be this omega theta divided by r, and then you define the gamma, which is the quantity, which is r times v theta. This quantity is actually angular momentum, if you think about it, because it's r times v theta, clearly it's angular momentum. So the angular momentum equation is actually very nice. The angular momentum equation itself looks like the following. It's dt plus d dot b dot gradient minus the Prussian plus 2 over r dr of gamma equals 0. And this omega, capital omega equation, is almost the same as the gamma equation, except there's a source term in terms of v theta. Okay. And now what is the b? The b is a vr er plus vz ez. So this is a vector consists of vr and vz. So if you look at the gamma equation, so now let's just spend 1 minute look at gamma equation. The gamma equation, if I give you the b, then the gamma is satisfied equation by itself. It has nothing to do with anybody. So so we try to study this gamma equation by freezing the b and try to derive estimate on this object. This is the starting point. Now, of course, the b will depend on vr and vz, and which were once again depending on omega, but it doesn't matter. But this is the except this drift term, then this equation is the equation for gamma by itself. It does not depend on other variables. The omega equation is harder because on the right hand side it depends on v theta, and v theta will couple to gamma once again. So it still looks very bad equations, and also the sign here is changed from plus 2 to minus 2, and this is some subtle details. And our assumption says the velocity v, suppose I assume the velocity v is bounded by a constant divided by 1 over r. This is actually the key assumption we put. We assume that the velocity is bounded by constant divided by r. Now, here there's some, I should mention one thing is that because our theorem, let me go back to the previous page. Our theorem assume this case, right? So the v is less than 1 over r between, its interpolation between 1 over r and t to the minus 1 half. So this means the assumption I'm putting here, b, this velocity less than 1 over r, is not exactly satisfied, but let's just do this case. I mean, the other case can be done also, so let's just consider this case. Okay, so, and this is some subtle point because this one is not indicable, but we are not going to talk about this, such a details. So the idea is now, under this assumption, b is less than constant c star over r, then we can prove that this gamma equation is actually Hödel continuous. So this is actually the key point. If you look at these gamma equations, and if you assume that the velocity is less than constant over r, then you can actually prove the Hödel continuous. Because once you prove it's Hödel continuous, then because the gamma is the v theta times r, so this tells you the v theta is the constant times r to the alpha minus 1. Because this Hödel continuous alpha will improve the v theta estimate from r minus 1 to r to the some positive constant minus 1. And once you do that, you break the scaling. So the key idea is really where you can break the scaling. Because if you don't break the scaling, then no matter what you do, it's all the same. You're not going to go anywhere. So this is the key point. And once you do that, and the rest is more standard thing, so I just briefly go through it. And what you do is you take a weak limit. And now you take weak limit, you take weak limit of the Brock solutions, but because the Hödel continuity, then this term will go to zero because it's not because the velocity respect the standard scaling, and now you know that it's the v theta in the previous slide we showed is r to alpha minus 1 break scaling. So if you blow this up, you will actually go to zero. So now you know the limiting equation where only has no V theta component. So this is any weak limit has no V theta component. But once this one has no V theta component, we go back to omega equations. The omega equation, this capital omega equation is the voltage divided by R. Then you find the right hand side actually is vanished because now the right hand side, the previous equation, there's a right hand side depending on V theta, but in the weak limit, this term simply drop. So once this term drop, then it's easy, then you can just show you can prove everything. And so this omega bar will be bounded and so on. So you know the Brouwer solution will be regular. So in particular, this Brouwer V bar will be in L infinity. And once you know this is in L infinity, then of course, then you look at this quantity. This is the GKN criterion. This number will be small. And then you show that before passing to a limit of V, this will also be small as long as this R is small enough. And so that this check this GKN criterion and you prove that it's regular for the original equation. So this was the idea. Now, the only thing is how much the real technical difficult point is how do you understand the regularity of this equation? I mean, this sounds like this is absolutely simple looking equations and it's a linear, it's not even nonlinear. So I think the title of this conference is the nonlinear problem in mathematical physics. But here's a linear problem, I have absolutely no idea how to do it. So the question is the following. You take these equations, just the Laplace equation plus the drift term. Now, you know a lot of the regularity result. If the B is smooth or if B is in L3, L3 plus epsilon. And it can be singular if B is really bigger than 1 over x. If it's more singular than this, it can really be singular. You can just differentiate almost arbitrary. You can differentiate log x, you will find this example. And then, but if you know that if this less than constant over x, and if you know it's divergence free, if you add divergence free condition, then you know it's further continuous. Okay. On the other hand, if you know divergence is free, you can increase the B singularity to constant over almost x squared. It's still regular. It will still be bounded. Sorry, it's not regular. It will still be bounded. Now, on the other hand, you don't know that in the case of divergence is free, and if x to the power, if B is constant over x to the 1 plus epsilon, as long as this epsilon is positive, then the regularity, the Herder continuity of this equation is actually open. So, I mean, I ask many people in PD, so this apparently is open problem, and it's not known what to do. So the question now is how to do this. Now, in our case, this B will be 1 over R, so let me show you our equation. Our equation, the gamma equation like this. So you get this equation, and 2 over R dr. Now the gamma equation is almost the same as the previous equation I showed you, except now it's a parabolic form, and also there is a special term here, 2 over R dr. Now this 2 over R dr, this actually is the first derivative, but this term is not divergence free, because the B is divergence free, but not this term. This term is not divergence free. So we cannot use the divergence free result. But on the other hand, we know that this gamma at R equals 0 is 0. So this actually is some very important. Otherwise, we don't know. Now we want to prove this the Herder continuity of this parabolic equation. And what's the idea? The idea to prove Herder continuity of a parabolic equation or elliptic equation is there are actually three methods. One is, it's not three methods, there are just two methods really. One is by DeGeorge's argument, the other one is by Nash's argument, and also Nash-Moser. Or you can combine the DeGeorge with Moser's idea. But then, on the other hand, because I know that gamma is 0 equals 0, so you know you cannot prove any Hadamard inequality because it just simply has to be 0 at the point 0. So what we do is the following. we try to prove the oscillation estimate, meaning that the oscillation of gamma in the cube R, and then the hour we shrink to from R to epsilon R, actually you'll find the oscillation actually improved by a constant smaller than 1. And once you do the oscillation estimate, you get the Herder continuity. Now, the proof of the Herder continuity, actually we wrote two papers and we tried to check that if any method is better than the other one. So we used the DiGiorgi method combined with Moser in the first paper. In the second paper, we use a Nash approach. And at the end, it's all the same because exactly the same condition, we cannot go beyond it. It's all the same. So I would just say a few words about the idea based on this approach of Nash. Because Nash's idea is easier to explain because, it's not easier to explain. It's easier to hide. It's easier to hide the details. So, because the DiGiorgi's approach is actually much, it requires a lot explanation. So what you do is you first take a function u, you just normalize this gamma so that the minima equal to 0 and the maxima equal to 2 and it's between and at r equal to 0 is some number a bigger than 1. Then what I want to do is if I shrink the cube from R to epsilon times R, then I want to show that the maxima and the minima of U actually improve. And the way to show improve, for example, to show the minima improve, is this is how one used the Nash's idea. That was because the Nash's idea in the beginning was used to prove that if you read the Nash paper, he first proved the upper bound and the lower bound of the heat kernel. And from there, he tried to prove the overlap of green functions, and then he gets some regularities. But in our case, it looks like the Nash idea cannot apply because you don't have a lower bound on the heat kernel here because I know that gamma has to be equal to 0 at 0. Now, on the other hand, one can use the Nash idea in the following way. So what it means is that you can actually use directive Nash idea to prove the Herder regularity without go through the heat kernel or whatever. Yes?
In here, the two terms,
yes,
are in
3D,
right?
Yes.
So the Laplacian, and this is the radial Laplacian?
Yes. No, this Laplacian is Laplacian of everything. But it's just the function V is, has R, theta, and Z. But this is a Laplacian of just like a regular Laplacian. So now the idea to follow, the way to use the Nash idea to prove regularity.
There's a theta.
Because now I have to prove that when there's a theta, and then I have to prove a Herder continuity in order to pass through the limit. In the limit, there will be no theta because V theta will vanish. But before I pass through the limit, everything is there. I have to first prove. So let me go back a little bit. So I think I'm going too fast. Sorry. So this is the equation for gamma, and because now the idea is now I rewrite the Navier-Stokes equation, the axiosymmetric case, into these two equations. So there's no limit, nothing is taken. So the original equation is equivalent to these two equations.
Could you just remind me, you have a d by dr at the end and you have a d dot gradient.
Yes.
The gradient involves...
Oh, the d dot gradient is this term. The d dot gradient, sorry. So let me look. This is the d dot gradient. This is... B dot gradient is actually the abbreviation for this term. So it's a transport term. So this is arranged with just slightly different notations. And now you can see that you don't have any of the 2 over R dBr term here. And that term comes out. So this term comes out. This term comes out because I multiply by R here. So if you check the Laplace operator when you're acting on functions, and if you multiply by R, then you produce something extra, and so this is how this extra term comes out. And he, because his capital omega is divided, so instead of plus, it becomes minus. Right? So I want to show the regularity of these equations. And the idea to show regularities, and this is what the technically, I think it's, what's the interesting point is that you can use the Nash's idea without go through any of these heat kernel, whatever, you can do it directly to give a Herder continuity. So now, if you normalize your functions, and what you want to show is you take a V equal to log U. So now, if, remember when U equals zero, then this V will blow up. So instead, so then you find the V will satisfy this equation. Now you have an extra term here, it's mass gradient V squared. And this extra term will be very important. And then the point you study these equations, then try to prove the forwarding bound on the velocity. You just prove the velocity actually it can be, if you prove that this V actually is integrable in some small interval, in some small ball, sorry, it's not RP. You prove that in some small ball that this V is integrable, and this will, now from this estimate, then you combine with some L1 to L infinity estimate, then you show that this V will be bounded. And this V is bounded, and it tell you that if you shrink your ball, then the log U actually will be away from zero, and this proves the regularities. So now I think the conclusion, so I will stop the talk here, because the conclusion is it's actually this, the regularity of the linear equation, we cannot really improve very much. And the best we can do is go to constant over R in the drift term. And this constant over R is sort of the borderline of the method by Nash or by the DiGiorgi, as far as we know. And I don't think there's any, I mean, we checked lately, there's no better result than go beyond this. So if one can improve this, then there might be some chance to improve this result. But so far, this is what we can do. Well, thanks a lot.